Welcome to Da Vinci's Discourse, where the minds of today's most innovative entrepreneurs are unveiled and explored. And my name is Kyle Campbell, your guide on this journey into the depths of the entrepreneurial psyche. So sit back, relax, and get ready to dive into the minds of the greats. This is Da Vinci's Discourse.
All right, so Jason, man, awesome to have you here, brother. Why don't you tell me a little bit about yourself? Let's say somebody asked you who you are. What would you say to them?
Nobody needs to know. I think an internet strategy, internet marketing strategy, consultant is probably the best way to describe me from a generic perspective. I do two primary things. Influence marketing is kind of my specialty, my wheelhouse. I do very bespoke, kind of white glove influence marketing programs for brands, where I build relationships with creators over time to, nurture something along that's a little bit more than just spray and pray. It's got to be a little bit more involved, because I like to think of it strategically, not just as a tactic to drive a bunch of mentions online. That's my primary sort of wheelhouse. And then I've also carved out a nice little niche for myself as a social listening practitioner. I do a lot of online research, using social listening tools to help brands understand their audience, understand how the audience interacts with their products, things like that. And I've been doing that for quite a while as well. So those are my two primary things. And then to support that, I podcast. And actually, as a kind of a side hobby, I run the Marketing Podcast Network, which is about 60 different shows that are all about marketing in some form or fashion. And I just kind of help my fellow podcasters, get their shows out there and get them running. So that's kind of what I do.
Oh, I love that, dude. It kind of tails in with the first part of what you said that you do, the networking, not just tactical, but actually relationship building. And that's so strategic, dude, because you're at the top of the 60. So you've met all of the 60, and then that can kind of cascade down into the next, the exponential growth at that point, right? Because the one can introduce you to five people, then those five people. So you can see the tree start to expand. So yeah, it's strategic as all hell, man.
Yeah, I've had really good relationships with a lot of those folks that are in my network for quite some time. And when I started the network, it was like, I did a marketing podcast. I knew a bunch of other people that did, but we weren't helping each other. And I just, kind of reached out to them and said, why don't we be on the same network and do an ad platform and be able to share revenue and be able to cross promote each other? And everybody sort of thought it was a good idea. So that's where it started.
I love it, dude. You got to hook me up in that. We got to get me in there.
Let's do it.
let's get me in there, dude. So I love it. Let's go into the strategy of it, a little bit of strategizing the way that you can expand your network like that. And it sounds to me like you are a facilitator of joint ventures. You've got strategic partnerships that you can facilitate through the connections that you make. So, and also the of course, the straight up just posting and having promotions done by influencers as well. So let's go down that road. If I were to ask you, how do I get started with that? Where would you take it?
Well, so, influence strategy, and you'll notice I don't use influencer strategy. I don't use the R on the end of the name, word. And the reason I do that is because I really feel like it's got to be focused strategically on what you're trying to do. You're trying to influence an audience to take action. It doesn't have anything to do with the individual person with all the followers on social media. They are a conduit to influence an audience, but you might, if you're thinking strategically and you want to influence an audience to take action, you might say, well, I don't need someone with a lot of social media followers. I need someone who actually influences a specific audience. So I like to use the example of there's a chain, location, a franchisee of the Parent Teacher Store here, about 2 minutes from my house. And so they sell academic supplies and textbooks and workbooks and whatnot, and supplies for teachers and administrators, but also for homeschool parents, things like that. And so, if you are the owner of that franchise here in Louisville, Kentucky, someone who has 400,000 followers on Instagram doesn't do you any good, because a very small fraction of their audience, if any at all, are going to be within 15, 20 minutes of your store, right? So for a small business or a geographically bound business, these big social media influencers don't mean anything, and they shouldn't. What you need is you need to find people who are influential over those who buy academic materials in Louisville, Kentucky. So maybe it's the president of the local PTA group. Maybe it's soccer and basketball coaches who talk to youth league parents all the time. Maybe it's the president of the local homeschool parent organization. Right now, you've got people who influence the people who are going to buy from you. It doesn't have anything to do with how many followers they have, how much engagement they have on Instagram or anything like that. So if you think about influence marketing strategically, you're thinking about how do I persuade an audience to take action? And that can be using social media creators, but it can also be using lots of other things. So to start anything, any discussion out strategically is what's your goal? What are you trying to accomplish? Because if you're trying to accomplish driving sales of this store of the parent teacher organization here in Louisville, I'm probably not going to recommend very many online influencers at all. I'm probably going to say, well, there's a couple of local parenting resources. There's a really good blog that a lot of families look at here in Louisville called Louisville Family Fun. And it's kind of like, what are we going to do on the weekend? Well, that's reaching the audience. It's not reaching them about academic stuff, but you can advertise with that particular website and get in front of a lot of parents. So that's one way to influence that audience. But I'm probably going to recommend a lot more offline members of the community to let's build a strategy around them. How can we engage them to then turn to their audiences and say, hey, you should go here to buy your school supplies. So it really all starts out with your goal. What are you trying to accomplish and what audience are you trying to motivate to accomplish that with?
Right. Yeah, I love it, dude. The way I look at it is starting with psychographics. So what are they buying? Why are they buying it? And then this opens up a realm of opportunities in terms of who you can partner with. Because if you find out who they're buying from right before they buy from you, you know, if your product is, let's say, a Facebook ad course, right before they buy from you, they might be buying a course on how to structure an offer, right? Mm-hmm. So because they need an offer to run the Facebook ad. So if you can contact the guy who's selling to your audience right before they buy from you, you can have a package deal, a joint venture where you can hook up some sort of a synergistic relationship with that individual and get access to their target audience, which is freaking sweet. I love that. It's amazing because it's beneficial for everybody, right? Sure. So that's where I start with that is the psychographics. And then I'm wondering, so how do you know who to partner with? How do you know who's going to have that access? And then also, how do you get in contact with them?
Well, there's a couple of different, you know, paths that you go through it. And it all depends on really who you're talking about. If you're talking about another business, you know, you really just kind of have to reach out to them and say, hey, you and I are marketing to the same audience. Let's come up with, you know, some package deal that incentivizes the audience to do business with both of us. And, you know, any smart marketer on the other side of the aisle is going to say, okay, let's have a conversation and figure that out because it just makes sense. You know, they want access to your audience, you want access to their audience. And if you can find something that is a win-win for both of you, then it's ultimately a win for the audience too. And everybody goes home happy. Yeah. But if it is an online creator, a social media content creator, you know, there are fortunately in that world, there are tools out there that help you identify who the right ones are. You have to, you know, kind of use those tools and think through, well, who am I looking for? So again, if I'm a local business, the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to say, I need a tool that filters by geography because, you know, somebody in, you know, Oxnard, California doesn't mean anything to my business here in Louisville, Kentucky. So I've got to find, you know, tools that filter content creators by geography. Maybe I need to filter them by age or other demographical, you know, patterns. I also want to look at content creators, their actual content. Does their content align with what I want to see from a content creator publishing about my brand on their feeds? Is their content the kind of content that I want and I don't have the resources to create myself? So it's more of a user-generated content play where you say, hey, I don't really even care if you post to your audience. I want you to create these great videos for my brand. So how do we work out a freelance arrangement where you're doing that for me? So in the content creator space, there are tools out there that will help you do it. In the, you know, sort of brand partnerships and strategic partnership space, it's really just about finding the right people and the right contacts. I've done the rudimentary stuff like DMing someone on Instagram through their business account. I've also reached out to people on LinkedIn and said, hey, I'd love to partner with your company on behalf of this client. Here's what we're trying to do. In fact, I'm in the middle of a conversation with somebody about that right now, where I literally sent them a friend request or a LinkedIn request. and said, I'm reaching out to you because I work with this client and it makes too much sense for you guys to not be working together. And I'd like to figure out how we can make that happen. And they responded, said, I'd be open to the conversation. So there we go.
Interesting. So yeah, I think people overcomplicate it, right? It's pretty simple. It's you're essentially building a relationship with somebody, but what if you don't have the audience to be able to reciprocate? So what if you're tapping into somebody who has, you want to connect with somebody who's got 100,000 people on their email list. If they sent one email to them with your product or somehow associated with your product, it would change your friggin' life, you know? Yeah. So, right? And so one single email campaign could just set things off, but you don't have that audience to reciprocate with. So you can't say, well, we can promote each other, but you have a synergistic fit with them. How do you go about opening that relationship, opening the door and making that happen with them?
Well, you've got to find something of value to them. If you don't have the audience, you know, value to bring to the table, then, you know, are you able to provide creative? Are you able to, you know, provide extra benefits for their audience by using your product? Can you pitch it so that it makes sense for them to say, yes, we want to partner with you. The audience is secondary. We want to partner with you for this reason. You know, so if you are looking for, let's say you're looking at a, you know, a big appliance company and you want to partner with a big appliance company. Well, if you make filters for their appliances or you make, you know, drip trays for their ovens or something like that, then you can say, hey, you don't currently offer this product. If you offer this product on your website and to your audience, you are, you know, basically following through on that customer journey for your customers even better. And I can supply that for you. So you just have to make an argument that is compelling to them to say, well, okay, he doesn't have an audience that I want to reach necessarily, but he's got a solution that my audience needs. Yes. I don't have to go create it. So find a way to pitch your thing that shows ultimately a benefit for them, but also for their audience. And you're probably going to at least get their attention.
I think that's a good point too, because it's also a benefit for their audience, which I think somebody might miss thinking about this. Plus if you frame it like that, it makes it a lot easier to be able to approach them, because you're not selling, you have a genuine solution that they could, if they offered to their audience, would improve the way that their audience looks at them, would improve their revenue, would improve the experience that they have with their product. And then there's all kinds of opportunities that you can work out with them down the line. What I'm curious about is, how tactically speaking would you go about introducing yourself with one of these people? If that was the case, if you have a product or a service that would fit right in with what they have to offer, but you don't have the audience, what would you open that relationship up with? How would you kick it off?
I mean, I would do it the way that I just described. The one partnership I'm working on now, I would, you know, try to connect to the right person on LinkedIn, or I'd try to reach out to them and maybe DM the company Instagram account and say, hey, I've got a really cool idea. I'd love to know who to talk to about it. And you soft pitch it. You don't want to give them too much information, you know, via DM, but just let them know, hey, I'm just trying to think holistically about how your audience can have a better experience with your products. I happen to have something that might work. I'd love to talk to someone. And it's really just about networking until you get to the right person. For this one instance that I'm talking about, where I'm trying to sort of bring these two brands together to do something cool from a content collaboration perspective, I literally went to LinkedIn and looked at the company and looked at all of the titles of all the people that it listed as their employees and found someone who was basically in charge of brand partnerships. And I was like, well, duh, that's the person I need to talk to. So I, you know, sent them a request, told them in a sentence or two what my, you know, why I was trying to connect with them. And they not only accepted the request, but responded and said, I'd be open to the conversation. So we've started this little message back and forth. And, you know, hopefully I'm able to, you know, successfully say, this is why this content partnership would work really, really well for you. And here's why it would work really, really well for my client. And let's see if it'll work. And hopefully they'll think so.
Yeah, make it a no-brainer, right? And I think the key with that, dude, is taking all the risk away. Because I learned this from my mentor, Jason Flatland. One of the things that he taught me was, if you were to take all of the risk away from somebody as opposed to stacking the benefits, reducing the perceived risk, then it makes it a lot easier for that deal to go through, for them to at least want to hear you out. And there's four different ways that people can perceive risk. It can be to their reputation. It could be to their resources. It can be towards the there's a couple more, but what it comes down to is reducing risk as opposed to just stacking the benefits. What are some things that we can do to kind of avoid doing that? If somebody reached out to you, for example, would be kind of a red flag if you had somebody reaching out to partner with you, even if they had a good solution, what's a mistake that people could make that we want to avoid?
Sure. I mean, I think when people ask things of me, I typically go through almost the list you started to fire off there. Is it going to cost me time? Is it going to cost me money? Is it going to cost me other resources that I don't have? Yeah. And is it going to be potentially harmful to my reputation? You know, is partnering with this person going to be perceived as being weird or whatever? I'm going to go through, you know, that list, that risk assessment list, and say, okay, if it doesn't cost me a lot of money and it doesn't cost me a lot of time and it's not going to hurt my reputation, and conversely, it might help my reputation, yeah, it might make me money, it might create more time. Now, all of a sudden, I'm starting to nod a little bit and be, okay, this makes a lot of sense. So you have to remember, if you are proactively going after a collaboration or a partnership with someone, the best way to a yes is to remove all of their hesitation, right? And the hesitation is always going to be, does it take up too much of my time? Does it take up too much of my money? Is it going to hurt my reputation? And then, will it make me money? Will it create more time? Will it make my life easier? Then the partnership typically makes sense.
Right. Because you want to do that proactively. It's difficult though, because you can't just, I mean, maybe you can, but it's hard to just overtly say it's not going to hurt your reputation, because really, if you say that to somebody, that all you put the image in their mind of it hurting their reputation, you know, the unconscious will kind of just negate the not part and just say, oh shit, hurting my reputation. Nope. Right.
Well, that's where good personal branding or good company branding comes into play. Regardless of who it is, somebody reaches out to me that I don't know, or that I even know a little bit, the first thing I'm gonna do is go Google them. You know, who is this person? Who is this company? What do they look like? What does their website look like? What do their social feeds look like? Do they seem to have an audience? Do they seem to be trustworthy? And so that's where I'm going to start. That's where your website's important. Your social content's important. The way you present yourself is important out there, whether you're an individual or a company, because the first thing most people do when they're trying to figure out whether or not they want to work with you is they Google you. And if what they find on Google leads them to, oh, this person doesn't really even take pictures that are in focus, and they have, you know, their company email address is a Gmail account, that doesn't seem real reliable right now, all of a sudden there's red flags popping up. So you got to tighten up your home base before you start reaching out to people. So when they do that research, they go, oh, okay, they seem legit.
What about automation? Because I'm thinking, if we can automate some of this process, what's your viewpoint on that, especially with AI nowadays?
Well, I mean, I think there are opportunities to make any job flow, workflow more efficient with automated tools. However, I would never recommend any sort of mechanism that would automate the sort of communication from one to one. Now, obviously, if you're doing email marketing and you're sending stuff out to lots of people, there's a mechanism of automation at play there. It's not one person talking to each individual person. It's, you know, a blast, for a better lack of a better description. But when you get to the point to where you're having AI write your email, you know, email outreach, sales outreach to people, and you're not proofreading it, you're just assuming that AI is going to do a great job, you're taking the human interaction away from that. And if you're not watching for replies and responses and responding individually, not with some sort of automated trail, then you're taking that human one-to-one contact and experience out of the equation. The less human the interactions are, the less successful they're going to be, because even though consumers, all of us know, oh, there's, you know, ways to make things more efficient with AI and automation and other things, we also know that.
Hey, I hope you're enjoying the podcast, and I want to let you know that I've got a free book that you can get if you want to tap into more of these resources, and you can get that for free at kylesbook.com. Back to the podcast.
We don't want to do business with people who we don't know, like, and trust. And if I'm constantly put through some automated email mechanism, or if I call into your business to ask a question and I can't get a human being on the phone because I'm being bounced around in an answer tree, a sort of customer service phone tree, then I'm losing the confidence that I know you or that I even really like you. And I certainly don't trust you at that point because I'm like, well, if I can't get a hold of anybody, you know, and that's why you see so poor of a customer service reputation for bigger companies, because they have to automate certain processes like customer service and support and whatnot. The more they do that, the less consumers like them, the less consumers trust them, the less consumers want to do business with them.
Yeah, no kidding, right? You see that with Amazon, for example, they're trying to move towards the automation, and it's a pain in the ass to try to get to an actual human being, right?
Yeah.
And you can see a lot of the companies are moving in that direction. So on the flip side of that, there is the possibility of AI being a better customer service rep than a human would be. Like, we've all had the experience of being passed around from department to department. Like, oh, you're in the wrong department, let me transfer you. They transfer you to the wrong department, you get sent back, and kind of, you know what I mean? So AI wouldn't make any of those mistakes. I'm wondering what the future of this, because I look at AI as a facilitator of connection, not a replacer of connection, but something that can be leveraged to generate opportunities to connect. So I think that's the right way to look at it, as opposed to trying to replace the connection with AI.
Like I said, the less interaction human beings have with the communications process, the worse it's going to be. So AI is a great tool. It's a very powerful tool, and it can make certain things, certain steps in the process easier. But again, the less human interaction you have with the ultimate process, especially in communicating at the end result with the customer, then you're probably going to have, you know, less ideal results than you would otherwise. The whole sort of advent of the social web is proof positive that people want to do business with people. They don't want to do business with machines. They don't want to do business with computers. You know, they understand that, hey, if I can just go to Amazon and type up what I want and make a click and hit buy or purchase, and 2 days later it shows up at my house, that's great. But for certain things, like asking a medical professional for their opinion, you know, about a prescription or something, you can't automate that process because we are not inherently wired to trust computers. We are inherently wired to trust other human beings, even if we don't know who they are. I would much rather call my doctor's office and talk to the nurse about my prescription than go on WebMD and try to find something, or go to Walgreens automated phone tree and, you know, just get some sort of computer generated answer. I want to talk to another human being just because it makes me feel more confident that, okay, this person is talking to me. They're not talking to a database of possible answers for anybody's question. They're talking to Jason Falls, and I've said, here are the factors that go into my question. Please tell me what your best advice is. And they're basically giving me a custom answer because it's a human being listening to me.
Right. I know. I get it, dude. 100%. And I wouldn't want to be prescribed medicine by ChatGPT right now, for example, right?
Exactly.
You know, shit, exactly. It'll hallucinate and say, oh yeah, take some acid. That'll help you. It's a meta hallucination, which is funny. But humans make mistakes, man. That's one of the things, because if you were to explain your symptoms to a nurse, for example, they're prone to, especially if they've got to transmit that information to the doctor, a lot of information and data is lost in that transference. And so it's tricky, man. I don't know. I can see in 5 years, we get to the point where your answer might change, where you'd rather talk to an AI about it, but who freaking knows what's going to happen.
Yeah,
in 5 years.
I think there's going to have to be a lot more advancement in AI and a lot more usage by general consumers to have trust in it. I would absolutely 1,000% trust that nurse a lot more if I knew they were using AI to complement their own, you know, sort of questions and answers. So this person's complaining about what things do I need to ask them? That way the computer is making sure that the human's not missing anything. I think you're going to see AI integrated in those customer service functions a lot deeper like that in the future. You know, in terms of what I do with both influencers and social listening, I'm, you know, leveraging AI almost every day to not only make, you know, stronger recommendations on content creators that I might want to partner up with for one of my clients, but also, you know, taking When you're doing social listening, you're looking at hundreds of thousands of conversations. It's impossible for a human being to go through all that and say, well, here are the five things people really care about. But AI can do it in a couple seconds. So there's we're understanding more about what consumers are saying online and social listening because of AI. So it's making a lot of things a lot better. I think we need a few more years of consumers getting used to it, understanding it, and the technology itself getting better before we start to really and truly trust it.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, that's a good point, dude. I'm curious what you mean by social listening. I want to dive into that a little bit more. Because I think we fleshed out the joint venture and the strategic viewpoint of how you can make these partnerships. And I want to get into the social listening of it. So for those of you who don't know, what is social listening?
Sure.
And how can we leverage it?
Yeah. So social listening is not too far different from just a search engine. When you go to Google and say, you know, best sneakers, whatever, right? And you get results that come up. Well, what you're doing is you're asking a search engine to go out and find these articles about the best sneakers. What's the most popular content on the internet about sneakers. Social listening looks more specifically at social media conversations. So Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, Reddit, YouTube, et cetera. And you say, you know what I want, let's say you're Nike. So if you're Nike, you're going to say, I want to see every conversation where someone says Nike, or maybe they say Nike Jordans, right? So you're looking specifically for a product. So social listening tools, software companies that have built these engines over the years will bring up all of these conversations so that you can look at them, but they'll also analyze them. Some of them using AI, some of them using just, you know, machine learning and, you know, big data sorting. And they'll say, well, you know what, when people say Nike, this percentage of the conversation is positive in sentiment because we've analyzed the sentiment around it. And this percentage is negative and this percentage is neutral. And, you know, based on the profile data that we have of the people that are having those conversations, 57% are female and 43% are male. And so it gives you all these informations about the audience. It gives you all the information that a lot of information about what people are saying in terms of what are the most popular or most mentioned keywords that are associated with that. Yes. What are the related emotions that people transmit when they're talking about these things? So what you can do from a research perspective is understand when people are talking about my product or service or some other keyword topic that you're looking for on the internet, what does that say? What do people say in return? Do they like it? Do they dislike it? Do they complain about certain features? If they do, what are they? I can forward that to my product team so they can make the product better. Do they complain about customer service? Maybe that gives me a cue to go to my customer service team and say, hey, here's what people are saying about our service. We need to fix this, right? And then you can get really deep into it, especially on forums like Reddit, where you've got these really deep technical conversations sometimes in some of these Reddit threads. Yeah. And you can really understand not only what consumers think about your product or service, but how they use it, what are the use cases they use it for, what problems they have with it, what problems are consistent with it over the years, so you can fix those things. So there's a lot of research and development. There's a lot of product information. There's a lot of service information. There's a lot of marketing insights that you can pull out of those conversations if you're looking at them.
Yeah, no kidding, dude. Like Amazon reviews, you could, and it, like YouTube comments. I mean, there's all kinds of places that you can scrape that data. And where my mind goes with it is being able to, like, okay, let's say you don't have the conversation online about your product in particular. Let's say that you're not Nike. You're trying to sell a new shoe company that you're starting up, right? You paint them yourself, whatever. You're trying to find a hole in the market to be able to enter and get that USP. You can use the social listening to be able to analyze where there's a hole, what they're complaining about, and be able to step into that gap, which is where you can fully leverage that what's missing there. What are some other ways that we can leverage it? Like, let's say we do that with competitors, for example. How can we leverage it for our marketing?
Yeah, I mean, you can analyze what people are saying about your competitors, know what the consumers think are good about their products versus bad, so that you can capitalize on that. You can actually look at sort of the category as a whole. So let's say you sell tennis shoes, but you want to know more about the conversation and what consumers think and feel and say when they're working out, so that you can get a broader look at, okay, when people are using my product. Here's what they're thinking. Here's what they're feeling. Here's what they're talking about. Here are the other products that they are talking about when they are in that workout mode. Right now, all of a sudden, you're looking at, well, here's brands I can align with. And there's lots of great ideas in there. Probably the best example of a use case that I found doing this was several years ago. I did some analysis of Dirt Devil vacuums. I did not, by disclosure sake, I didn't do this for Dirt Devil. I did it as just a case study example of what I could do. I did share the information with Dirt Devil, but I did an example. I searched for what are people saying they use Dirt Devils for? Because there's lots of different Dirt Devil models. And I wondered, well, is it mostly for pet hair or human hair? You know, what do they use Dirt Devils for? So I'm looking at this analysis. I coded all these conversations and I look at all the analysis, and there's these big bubbles in this like sort of bubble graph of big bubble of pet hair and a big bubble of dust and a big bubble of human hair. And there's all these little bubbles of all the different things that people use them for, college dorms and things like that. And then there was this little, you know, sort of medium-sized bubble over here on the side that said blacksmithing. And I was like, what the hell is that? So I jump in and I start looking at these conversations, and it turns out that the handheld Dirt Devil vacuum has a small circular fan that runs it. And what blacksmiths, people who literally, you know, shape metal with heat, were doing, they were buying Dirt Devils, breaking them apart, and using the fan to directionally blow cool air on hot metal. And so the insight there to Dirt Devil is, if you can just take your fan and repackage it as a blacksmithing cooling agent, you've got a whole new market and a whole new product, and you can sell a whole new thing, you know, thing. And you can also have a community of people that absolutely loves you because you took the pain point of them having to find an alternative solution, break it apart, and hack this solution. So probably the best example of using social listening that I personally have ever done, where it's like, oh my goodness, there's an entire open market here for this that somebody needs to jump on.
Cool as hell, man. It's something you would never think that that would be the case. It's and plus, when you go to market with it, if they were to go to market with that, they already know that there's a demand for it. And they might even already have the locations in which they're communicating for that demand.
Exactly.
And they can enter the conversation that's going on in their mind, and also where the conversation is taking place. Yeah. And you can't do that without the data. The argument is, it's a fucking pain in the ass to get the data, man. Nobody wants to go fucking have to scrape the internet, put it all together, create these bubbles that you can. I mean, like, so what's the technology that you're using to, first of all, scrape the internet for your keyword, and then how do you go about making it so that it's easy to utilize?
Yeah, so there's lots of social media or social listening software out there. There's several brands. There's a brand, a platform called Brandwatch, which is what I did the Dirt Devil research with. There's one called Quid. There's one called Synthesio. There's one called Infogy. There's a bunch of different social listening platforms out there. And each of them have strengths and weaknesses, just like any other, you know, sort of software category. It's just finding the one that's going to help you, you know, find the solution that you're looking for. What are you using it for? A lot of people use social listening. Kind of the entry level is, we want to know when people talk about our brand so that if they're talking bad about it, we can route it to customer service and have it taken care of. And that's generally where brands stop. They don't think, oh, wait a minute, I can go find conversations about other things and use that as product insight. And so that's kind of where I come in as a strategic consultant, come in and say, okay, here's the software you should be using. Here's what you should be looking for. Here's how we can leverage this. And that's kind of one of the pieces of what I do.
Interesting. So you'll walk into a company and you'll do an analysis with one of these tools. First of all, you'll decide which tool to use based on their situation. And then you'll share that data with them. And all of a sudden, they've got a prediction of what marketing will work, what products are needed in the marketplace, where to sell these products. You just come in with a boatload of data and implement all of this results that you're able to bring them. It's like a superpower you bring in these guys. I mean, shit, like, yeah, well, no kidding.
It's knowing what software is out there, knowing how to use it, and then, you know, routing the data, you know, the insights the right way. And, you know, some companies have entire teams of research analysts that do it for them, and others need consultants to help them. And that's where I come in.
And it's so much better than trying to predict what they're going to like in spending years building the product, hundreds of thousands of dollars, having it molded and assembled and, have it all put together, having to buy all the merchandise or the components and then put it together. I mean, who knows? Instead, you just find something that's already working and then already needed in the marketplace and step into that with you and lean right into the pain points and what they're already talking about that they need.
Sure.
And then you've got the locations of where to get in contact with them, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's fascinating. It's an underutilized marketing technique that I feel like a lot of people miss out on.
I would agree.
You know, you probably find that when you go into companies, you're like, shit, dude, if only you did this 2 years ago, you wouldn't have had all that pain.
Well, and the software has been around, for 10, 15 years. It's just that companies haven't, they start out with that immediate use case of protecting their reputation in the social conversation, which is a perfectly fine use case for those software platforms. And lots of companies use it for that. But they stop there and don't realize, wait a minute, we can get more out of this social listening practice if we really try. The problem is finding people who know how to use the software really well and can think strategically about how to use a platform like that. There's not a whole lot of those people out there. I mean, the people who in the marketplace who think that way are people who typically work at the software companies or people who have, been practicing this for a while. There's not a whole lot of people out there that do it. But the ones that do and the companies that do have seen, a lot of benefit from doing it for sure.
No kidding, man. I can imagine. So, dude, what's a question that I should be asking you right now that I'm not asking you? That if I were to ask you, it would take the conversation to where you think it should go to provide the most amount of value in the social listening realm or the joint venture realm. What's a question I should be asking? Do my job for me, baby. Let's see what you got.
Well, I mean, I think you've covered a lot of really good ground here. I mean, those are the two primary things that I know and do well, are the social listening piece and the influence marketing, collaboration piece. I think the other thing that I bring to the table that I think is a benefit is podcasting and understanding how that works, for businesses and brands. There's plenty of businesses out there that I wouldn't, recommend podcasting for, hey, let's implement this tactic and it's going to drive a bunch of sales. But if you're trying to position your company as, executive in your company as a thought leader in your industry, if you're trying to be a market leader within your segment, then having that expertise out there on display with a weekly or monthly podcast where, you're talking about the issues of the day, you're educating the marketplace, you're priming those customers out there at the top of the funnel so that you can get them in the middle and bottom of the funnel. Podcasting is an incredibly powerful mechanism. It can be audio only. It can be video. It can be, it can be both. It can be either or. But it's a great way to get some dynamic content out there about your product, your service, your brand, your thought leadership position. And position your company or the people within it as experts. And that goes a long way with consumer trust these days. There's a lot of great podcasts out there in the business segment that are being listened to by, market leaders within that segment that are even, present, not just sponsored by, but actually the product of companies, and they're winning market share because of it. So I would encourage anybody that's at a business that, especially a B2B business that targets other businesses, if you can create some compelling content in the form of a podcast, whether it's video or audio or both, I think it's a fertile ground for building your reputation and building trust with consumers, which ultimately is going to lead to market share.
Yeah. And not looking at it short term where you're expecting a profit right away. Yep. This is a long-term play, right? I'm wondering how these three things that you specialize in come together, dude, because you've got the strategic partnership, which is, maybe you start the relationships off with a podcast interview and see what opportunities unfold or kind of blossom as a result of that. See blossom. Yeah. See, so see what like a flower, right? And then you can also take into account the research capabilities that you're able to implement for people too. And that's kind of the synergy, the middle point where all three of them touch. How do you use all three of them together?
Well, I mean, I think for a business or brand or company, I think I would start with social listening, because if you understand the marketplace first, then you can understand more about where to go and what to do. And you can use social listening to identify who are the influential voices that are already out there. Who are the people listening to? Who are the people talking and who's listening to them? Because that's going to be where you start with your strategic partnerships and alignments and things like that, and or quote unquote influencers, if you want to look at it from that perspective. And then that, you know, sort of goes into your influence marketing strategies of building relationships with them and positioning yourself to the marketplace because you have these partnerships. But then all the while you're building your own status as an influential voice in the marketplace by having a podcast and being out there creating your own content so that eventually you're not looking at a landscape of signal amongst the noise. You're part of the signal amongst the noise because you're creating that expertise out there as well.
Right. Yeah. No kidding. Right. It's perfect for authority and trust. You know, you're the, and you're the one that cared enough to go out of your way to make the content for them. And so exactly. when the decision to make a purchase comes up, they say, oh, this guy helped me more than anybody else. Let's see what they have to offer. Yep. I love it, dude. It's I love the way that the three come together. So cool what you can do with social listening, man. The tools, the ability to have those bubbles come up so you can see where, you know, because I've used tools like that. And it's like, holy shit, like, wow. Yeah. And I guess I think the thing is I underestimated the power of it. Talking to you, you start to realize the real power you can bring to your own organization or somebody else's, a client, by leveraging the research that's already able to be accessed like that. It's incredible, dude. Yeah. What's something else that we can kick this off with?
Wow. I mean, we've covered a lot. I think that's a good amount of stuff there. That's plenty for people to chew on.
I think you're right, dude. There was no downtime. Eh? There was no dead time. I mean, like it was like gold. You know, so like sometimes there's like, I don't know, some fluff in between. So, you know, it reaches the, longer time period with less implementable action.
Sure.
So I guess, right. So, but in this, it was like, no, this immediate profit opportunity just by doing these things. So, man, Jason, dude, thank you so much for being here, brother. You provided some massive value and paradigm shifts for us today.
Glad to do it. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure, man. Okay, dude. Wow.
All right. I hope you enjoyed that podcast episode. And if you want to get a free copy of my book, go to kylesbook.com and you can get a copy there. I'll talk with you soon.